Hi everyone, welcome to Gigi Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things drag, where in each episode we talk about real life experiences in the drag industry. I'm Olivia, one of Gigi Talks team members, and I'll be your host for this episode where we'll be talking about life growing up with drag with our special guest, Natalie Castro. So welcome Natalie to Gigi Talks. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I have to say it's such an interesting topic, and you know how when you get introduced somewhere, you're like, oh, tell us a cool fact about yourself. And this is for sure going to be my cool fact. Like, I'm on a podcast about drag queens. You should check it out.
Yeah, it's a pleasure having you here, Natalie. Thank you for taking the time. So Natalie will be here to talk a bit about her experience growing up with drag queens in Miami. She's going to share a little bit of her most memorable moments, some valuable learnings, and also some funny stories for us. So we're really excited to have you here and to hear more about your experience with drag queens. So Natalie, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? Like when? How did it come to be that you grew up surrounded by drag queens? It's not a common thing for us to hear that.
No, not common at all. So I'm a 90s baby, and growing up, my father was a DJ on the weekends or in the middle of the week at night. So he was basically like an executive during the day and a DJ at night. It was quite interesting. And he always DJed at different gay clubs. And it was just like they paid more, so that's where he went. And so because of that, I grew up very immersed in drag culture. The reason being is back in the 90s and 2000s, early 2000s, you know, you're talking about a time where you didn't have access to as many tools as you have now for music, right? Like, it's a lot easier now to make your own CD or your own playlist and stream it. You know, streaming wasn't even a thing then. So when drag queens had shows, right, and they wanted to do like two songs back to back, or they wanted to do a remix or do something different, they would come to our house, speak with my dad, and my dad would edit and make, you know, the song that they wanted with the tweaks that they wanted, and they would personalize their playlist. So it was curating the drag show, if you will. So from conception to execution, I was kind of around the whole scene. But yeah, that's actually why I was surrounded by drag queens, because of my dad's DJing. And it was a really great experience to grow up around them. It was definitely fun. And like I said, it was late 90s, early 2000s, and in South Florida, in Miami.
Yeah, that sounds like definitely a fun time. I always think that I was born in a, not the wrong time, I was 99, but I think I missed that 90s kind of, you know, vibe. And yeah, it must have been a really fun and unique experience. So Natalie, would you say then, I guess, that your big sisters were drag queens? Were you an only child?
So, no, I have a brother, an older brother. And, you know, he was just as, you know, immersed in the culture as well. And when it comes to thinking of them as my big sisters, I think that's one way of putting it, but I would definitely say that they were family. Like, they, you know, if my parents couldn't pick us up from school, like, they would, you know, my parents would call one of them and be like, hey, can you come and pick up our kid or whatever? Like, you know, they were very close. Or, you know, if my parents got sick, they would come and bring them chicken soup. Like, it's that sense of family. Like, we were just so close. And it's, when you think about it, you know how they have this concept of like a work family, right? Like, you see your work family more than you see your real family. Mm-hmm. In a sense, that was kind of like how it was going, like what was going on, because, you know, curating the playlist and everything took so much time. And then you're there on the weekends, or at least my parents were there on the weekends, that, you know, they developed such close relationships that, you know, whatever family event you do, you end up inviting your work family too. It's just, they become family. And I think that they were a big part of how I grew up and, you know, certain lessons I learned growing up. But I would definitely say they were close to our family, and I consider them very, very close to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's lovely. And do you remember the drag queens, their names, and how was the drags scene in the 90s? Like, was it the same as now? Do you know, do you still have contact with those drag queens?
So I think, you're talking about such a long time ago. So some drag queens I remember, right? Like the two that were the closest, I would say, were Maritrini and Maite. So Maritrini is still active in the community today. So you can literally Google Maritrini and she will show up on Google and you can see everything she does to support the local community. I want to say that she's basically a public figure. And Maite, I don't know if she continues to do shows. So I don't have close contact as anymore, but I always, like, I don't know, when an event happens or something, I do Google it, or I do stay up to date. I try, just because it's, you know, it's familiar, it's my background. And, like, I remember doing the AIDS walk with my parents and the whole group of people, and, like, you know, it was being a part of a community. So I think that when you're part of that community, it's so special. Like, you kind of just never get out of it. There's always a piece of you that stays there. So I don't have direct contact anymore, but I do try to stay up to date.
Mm-hmm. And were they, like, mostly Latina drag queens? Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice as well, because I feel like you can even relate more with them, you being Latina yourself, and then just also growing up. I feel like it's not even just a drag community. It's like family, a Latino family.
Yeah. That's actually pretty interesting that you mentioned that. So I think that one of the first times I think I was really immersed into culture was within the drag community, because, like, you know, they would do a potluck at my house, right? Like, everyone's going to come into playlist on Saturdays, right? Like, so everyone would come and bring something to eat. And it was like, okay, I'm going to bring tamales, or I'm going to bring, like, little taquitos. And my mom would make, like, Cuban food. And it was like the United Nations of drag performers. And it was interesting. It was interesting, definitely. I think that that was definitely one of my first experiences within culture, right? Like, oh, wow. I would say, like, oh, that person cooks really, really cool. Mom, tell them on Saturday to bring that. Or, like, you know, or it was just one of those things that it was different. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. It was a nice experience. But, yeah, they were all Latinos. You name it, from all parts.
Mm-hmm. And Natalie, did you speak Spanish back then, or did they did they teach you Spanish? How did that work?
That's so funny. So for those who are non-Spanish speakers, Spanish is different anywhere you go. So Cuban Spanish, from Mexican Spanish to Spanish in Spain, anywhere you go that speaks Spanish, that Spanish is different, right? And I think that one of the first things was, like, they would speak, I'd be like, but what's that word? I don't know that word. Like, I was expanding my vocabulary because it was the first time I was really, like, hearing language in a different perspective, right? Like, they would say, they would call, like, different items different things. Like, I forget the words, but, like, your whole outfit had, like, a term. You know, they would call, you know, just a lot of things differently. Mm-hmm. Than I was used to, but that was good for me because, you know, getting exposed to that and being in South Florida, it's good to be bilingual and to have that knowledge of different terms. I do remember struggling with Spanish, and I remember that there was this word, I would say, there's this meal in Spanish called croquetas, and I remember being a little girl saying coquetas, and coqueta is kind of like coqueteando, like you're flirty or something like that. And I was like, I want coquetas. And I was just trying to say I wanted the food croquetas. So they were laughing and be like, no, you don't. No, no, no. You're too young for that. Like, we'll get you croquetas, but you can't be coqueteando over there.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, Spanish, like you mentioned, I think drag terminology is already so, complicated, but, you know, it's already different in English. I can only imagine in Spanish. No, I could never. And Natalie, how was, because in the 90s people had a different mindset. I mean, even now people are still some people are closed-minded, but the drag movement is a lot bigger. But how was it back then? Was the people, like, was your neighborhood accepting? Were people accepting of drag queens?
So I never had that experience of seeing any hate, I didn't ever see that, to be honest. Again, I was very young. I'm talking about, like, I'm not even a teenager. I am a little girl, elementary school, okay? And, you know, I grew up around them. But from early start, that I, you know, my earliest memories of being in the community, and even now, I was never really exposed to an experience or witnessed an experience of there was any negativity or hate or anything of the sort. You would hear them talking about it, right? I never personally witnessed it. And I know that each and every person has an experience with it. And, you know, they will vent. And I heard, you know, their stories, their experiences. But from what I saw, no, I think that I was a part of a very accepting community. And I think that that's also why, you know, they felt so comfortable. They felt so close to us. You know, we loved them without any terms. Like, we, you know, just fully for themselves. There was a true acceptance. So I had a really good experience when it came to that. And also, I think South Florida is so much fun, right? Everyone knows that this is where you come to party, where you come to, you know, de-stress, have a good time, and people don't really get in each other's business because everyone's just trying to have a good time. So I think if anything, South Florida is more accepting than any other place, because it's like we're a little bit non-traditional, and I think that we're accepting of all cultures, we're accepting of all people. But you cannot deny that, you know, there's always going to be some experiences. Again, I never witnessed anything, but everyone does have their story. And I think that the club scene was so huge. I think there was a lot of support at the time. And I, you know, I'm very young at this point, but I think that it was my first time being able to say, this is a community. That community is so beautiful for the amount of support and resilience and triumph that they embody, that I'm so happy I learned that at such a young age and I was really a part of it. And I get to see it transform, right, from where it was in the late 90s, early 2000s to what it is now, right?
Yeah, and hopefully I think it'll just get better from here. I mean, there's still so much that needs to change, but I think there's been a huge improvement, and it's so great that they're really able now to have a space like the drag queens and inspire so many people. And Natalie, just to give a timeline, so you, how old were you exactly when you started, like, I guess growing up with them, and just a little background, how old were you? And also, I forgot to mention that Natalie's Cuban, because I just talked about like the Latino culture and everything. So Natalie's Cuban, but you lived in South Florida. But how old were you around this time?
So I cannot pinpoint a specific age. I can tell you this. My earliest memories of my dad DJing is my mom waking us up at my brother and I. She would wake up my brother and I at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. and say, get your blanket, get your pillow, let's get in the car, we're going to go pick up dad. Drive us to the gay community, to the gay club, and be like, hi, windows, there'd be a little cafecito, hey, how are you doing, look at the kids, they're so grown up, and my dad be like, pop the trunk, you know, this is heavy. You're talking about, you know, being a DJ back then meant you had to carry your equipment, and there was not like, okay, a laptop with your playlist on it, it was thousands of CDs, and my dad would carry these big boxes of CDs, like these big suitcases. And he was like super buff before it. And then my dad would pop the trunk, throw it in there. He'd be like, I'm starving. I want to go shower. What's going on? I'd be like, no, hold on. I still have to catch up with so-and-so. And then, you know, it was just like, I don't know. That was my earliest memory. I think I must've been like 6 or 7.
Wow.
You know, and that was that. And that's my earliest memory, but it was this sense of family. Like, that's the way you would greet your family, or like, hey, how are you doing? I haven't seen you forever. Like, there was a lot of love. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then I remember Saturdays, you know, were for, you know, people coming over whenever during the week that they could. and then, you know, having people come over to make these playlists, right? So, but it's funny because I remember, I think it was my 9th birthday. How old are you in 9th grade? Maybe like, I mean, nine years old. I think you're, what, in 3rd grade? Something like that?
I don't know.
Well, I was in elementary school, and I say to my mother, oh, my God, I want to spend my birthday with my dad. And, like, I want to make sure that he's there. And my mom was like, he's working. You cannot, like, we can't do it. I'm like, so take me to the parking lot, and we'll have my birthday in the parking lot. And so Natalie, at 9 years old, has her birthday in the parking lot of Ozone, which was the, like, biggest club in Miami. So just so you can get perspective, like, they... Like, Ozone was knocked down and used to make dorms for the University of Miami. Wow. And imagine how much space you have where you can make, like, a whole community of dorms.
Yeah.
A warehouse. And it was, like, the biggest club ever. Like, I think there was, like, 3 floors. It was, like, it was super impactful when you walked in there. It was just massive. It was the club. So I was like, Mom, you know, I can't have my birthday without Dad. You know, tell him to come outside for like 20 minutes while he puts on a song or something. Like, while he puts the mix, tell him to come down. Like, what 9-year-old knows those terms, right? Like,
yeah.
And they got a cake for me. And really, the parking lot guy with like his little stool, he brought it and they put my cake on the stool. And then like the closest, you know, family friends we had, that were there came out, they sang happy birthday to me, my dad sang happy birthday, and like, that's it, you know, I had my birthday. And then my dad went back up to go work, and then we went to go to like a little cafe, and we had like a little dinner, and then that's it. But that was my, I'll never forget, that was my birthday. Mom was like, I cannot believe I just did that. And I won't forget, I was wearing a completely pink outfit. I was wearing a pink and they're like, it's so cute. And I was like, I know, right? Like, exciting, like, to get their like a compliment from them, like, oh, I'm dressing well, and they're, you know, I'm getting compliments, and I don't know, it was their happy memories, for sure. Happy memories.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice. It sounds like they were really like inspirational to you, I guess. Like, did you looked up to them?
Yeah, I think so. I think that everyone has a different story on how they come out, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of strength in a lot of them, and they share that, they definitely share that. So I think that there was a lot of transparency, like, you know, they'd be like, you know, you have amazing parents, you don't know what it means for them to be so accepting and so loving, like, they're really a blessing. And they would tell us their stories, or they would tell us how they struggled to come here, because, you know, immigrants as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was an authenticity there, and they would always share, and, you know, hearing their acceptance stories, like, and hearing how happy they are, like, reconnecting with their family and stuff, like, that's beautiful. Like, sharing, I think that's one of the first memories I have of, like, saying you can share someone's happiness, that you feel happy for them. I remember there was one person in particular who hadn't spoken to their family because they were not accepting, and then, you know, they finally spoke, and they finally, like, reconciled, and it was like this sense of joy. I remember crying, like, oh my God, this person deserves to be happy. That's all I remember being a kid, like, this person is such a good person, they deserve to be happy, I'm so happy that they're happy now. And, like, that's such a beautiful thing to learn so early on in life. Mm-hmm. Just to not see people as anything, right? Like, to not judge, like, they're just people. They're just people. Mm-hmm. With great stories, with great perseverance. And they see a challenge and they overcome it. It was a great, you know, symbol of strength and authenticity. And, you know, I'm happy that that's still vibrant today within the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something that's so nice about children, is that, you know, because you learn to judge, you learn how to, you know, to be prejudiced. And when you're a child, you just see people for who they are. And the fact that I think you were exposed to that at such an early age, I think it says a lot about who you are now as a person, how you're very, you know, you're always so nice to everyone, so accepting, and you really just care about, like, not hurting people. So I think that definitely, I mean, you tell me, like, do you think that had you not grown up with drag queens, would you be who you are now?
Oh, I don't even want to think about that. It almost makes me sad. Oh, maybe, you know, who's to say? I don't know. I think that in my heart of hearts, I'm a very kind person. I have a lot of empathy by nature. So I think that I would have had the same amount of empathy. Maybe it would have been a little bit more time for me to understand the community better, or to, I don't know. I don't know the term, but I think I would have gotten here eventually, whether it had been early on learning that acceptance or not. I think that that's just who I am. And it's easy for me to see different point of views and understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like not everyone can do that. But for me, I kind of live my life like that. And so, yeah, I do think I would have gotten here. Would I have gotten here at the right now at this age? Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. But I'm happy that, you know, I did have those experiences and I did have this sense of we're just all people and that's all it is, you know. And also thinking of it in a different way, like being Latina, you know, seeing what goes on with immigration and everything and, you know, the differences, I still feel the same way there. So I think in one aspect or another, maybe I would have still had that perspective, whether it be through the gay community and drag queen community or like the Latino community, but that's just who I am by nature. So I think, yes, I think it would have changed me if I wouldn't have had that experience, but I still think I would be true to myself and have found that part of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I think also with, like you mentioning being Latina, and it actually surprises me at how you said how accepting people were in South Florida, because there's a huge Latin community, and mm-hmm. A lot of Latinos are still very like traditional and really religious. So it surprises me when you said that, you know, they're so accepting to drag queens. And also about you living in the U.S. as being Cuban, like now that you mentioned, I do agree. I do think that you would have, I think empathy really also comes from what you've been through. And Natalie, have you ever done drag? I mean, not perform drag, but, you know, did they ever like dress you up in drag? Did you ever, you know?
So I think that I remember going backstage and they were like getting dressed in the dressing room. I thought it was the most fascinating thing. It's like you're going backstage into like Jennifer Lopez's dressing room. Right? Like, this is my perspective. And I'm going in there, I'm like, oh, that's so cute. And I'm like, I want to try that on. And mom was like, can you stop? We're here saying hello. Oh, like, can you behave? And then I was like, okay. I won't touch anything. I remember. And then I remember like always wanting to put on certain things. So, I mean, like, yeah, I would try on their outfits. I'd be like, those are some really big high heels. Those are like, that's funny. And things like that. I would get to play with their stuff, or like, it was my first time really seeing wigs and seeing like how creative they can be, or like seeing someone putting it on. So, you know, it was like this whole new world. And I'm telling you, this is early 2000s, late 90s, where social media doesn't exist. So you don't have YouTube, you don't have Instagram, you don't have Facebook, you don't have the exposure to what this is at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you have no idea, right? And then it's like a whole new world when you go backstage. Like, oh, this is fascinating. Makeup, look at all these colors, and wow, all these brushes, and look at, you know, what are they doing? And, you know, I remember someone putting on fake lashes for the first time. I was like, whoa, what is that? I want to do that. It was fun. So I got to play with all other things. So no, I never did drag. Mm-hmm. I saw the transformation of, you know, what it took. Quite the process. I mean, then, I don't know now. I haven't been backstage in a drag queen show like in forever. So I'm sure it's a lot more modern and efficient. But then it was quite time consuming. And there were so many tricks. I remember seeing like tape, foam, stockings everywhere. And I was like, oh, okay. I would see them using the tape to like, you know, make a smaller waist so that they can have like that more feminine feature, or they would put foam to kind of give them curves. I was like, wow, what is this? Like, for me, it was like I was playing like life-size Barbie, and I was like, okay, this is so much fun. Like, wow, these people get to play dress up all the time. And yeah, that was, you know, such an innocent perspective, right? But mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's the best kind of perspective. It must have been like a little girl's dream, just, you know, so much. Because when I was little, it was the same with my mom's. You know, you always want to, when you're little, you always want to be an adult and a grown-up. And then when you actually get to be a grown-up, at least me, all I want to do is go back to that little self where, you know, you have little worries and everything is so mesmerizing. So Natalie, I bet you learned a lot of beauty tips. You mentioned that you were backstage a lot. So what were some of those tips that, you know, you learned?
So I remember seeing basically cake face for the first time. And by that I'm referring to contouring. So like the beginning of contouring, before contouring was known by like the Kardashians. So it was just one of those things where it was like, wow, they're drawing lines on their face and it looks so cool. Whatever it is that they're doing is really interesting. And, you know, then they were like explaining to me like, oh, I do this to make it appear like I have this feature, or like that I have a much more slimmer nose, or like, you know, this is the way that they would kind of like adapt a little bit more of like feminine features. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was fascinating. Like, absolutely fascinating. And I think that was interesting is like, at least for me, my perspective, I don't think like there was like such a big thing on plastic surgery then either. Like, you didn't see so much Botox, or you didn't see so much filler, or you didn't see so many things happening. So makeup was extremely important for the transformation. So I remember seeing contour in its true form, like what this magic does and how it transforms your face. And I also remember, you know, a very specific technique on how to apply mascara. And for me, it was interesting because I would be like, well, how do they even put on those eyelashes? Like, I cannot do that. How do they have like the precision to do this, the steady hand, right? And then they apply this mascara and somehow it looks 5 times bigger than without it. And how did you do that? To me, it just seems like magic. And I remember like growing up, and like if I had an event, I would say like, now looking back, it kind of felt like I had my own glam team. Now that I look back, I think that I kind of had that experience where it was like, oh, now he has an event. Let's get her dressed. And it was like, even for prom, like, you know, I went to prom twice, one my senior year and one prior. And the one prior, I remember they were doing my makeup, they did my hair, they were like pairing my shoes, and I was like, oh my god, this is fascinating. This is what J-Lo must do, like, right? Like, her team makes her look fabulous, and like it felt really good. And they would be like, no, you need bigger earrings, so you need statement earrings, or like, that's not your shade, or like, you have to apply it like this, or just so many techniques. And just like, you know, how to, you know, apply lip liner for larger lips. And just like, I'm just thinking, like, if it wasn't for them, like, I would not have learned makeup at the level that I currently know until maybe like in my 40s. Because now it's YouTube, right? Now you can go on YouTube, you can find everything. Mm-hmm. But growing up, like, that wasn't the case. I feel like, you know, 10-year-olds now can like go on YouTube and start playing with makeup, and they can start learning a lot sooner and become like little mini masters at the whole makeup artistry. And so I feel like I was a little bit lucky to kind of have like those tips and tricks early on. And so like, I always get compliments when I do my makeup. I always like, oh my god, like, where did you learn? I'm like, okay, yeah, I did go to modeling school, but now when I really think about it, I learned a lot from drag queens. Like, a lot. So yeah, I did learn a lot, like even fashion tips, like if you're wearing a dark dress, you should do like bright shoes because it makes a statement. Or you should pair your shoe, like your shoes and your purse should kind of match. I mean, yeah, your shoes and your purse should kind of match. Or, you know, if you're not going to do a necklace, you really need to do big statement earrings if you're going to wear your hair up. Like, there was kind of like rules. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, once social media started, coming about, God forbid you posted a picture and it was like, you can't wear that, or like, no, next time you're able to do this. So it was like, you know, you had fashion police on you.
Mm-hmm. So and Natalie, so you mentioned you went to prom, so that was your senior year. When you're senior and junior year, you're around, I already forgot, 17, right? So your, I guess your journey with the drag queens started when you were in elementary. So they were still in your life when you were in senior year, right? Like, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, you're talking about what, I guess, like 10 years, right?
Oh,
from my earliest memories, yeah, I think I would say like, yeah, about 10 years. So, yeah, and I, you know, I have the privilege like of being exposed to the community and seeing, like, I've actually seen transformations. Not a lot of people can say they've been through someone's journey, right? And I think that's so powerful because you see how someone actually grows into themselves. And it's something so pretty to see, like, someone becomes so comfortable, so confident, so happy. And I think that that also contributes to a lot of acceptance and support that I have for the community.
Mm-hmm. And Natalie, this might be kind of hard for you to answer because, like, going back to the fact that, you know, you've already mentioned quite a few memories that you have, and in within this 10-year period, do you have, like, the most memorable, most memorable moment, or a most memorable drag queen?
Oh, there's a lot of moments I remember. Some sad, some good. I remember it makes me feel, I don't know, it makes me feel sad when I talk about it, but I remember certain people contracting HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember mom saying, hey, so-and-so's sick, we're going to go to the hospital and we're going to see them and we're going to be supportive. And I remember that. I remember, you know, within the community, like, raising money. My mom was like, you know, we got to raise money. This person, you know, doesn't have any family here. Like, we're their family. Like, we need to do something for them. We need to support them. And seeing, again, that sense of community. And I don't know. It was a good thing to be exposed to, I think, of this is what happens in the world. Like, I'm not going to shelter you. This is something that happens, and it's okay. You know, like, be exposed to it. Know that this happens. Don't be ignorant. And I go back to this because this person's name was Bobby, the person who passed away. And I remember Bobby was such a kind soul. And I remember growing up, you know, kind of at that stage where you feel like you kind of know Santa isn't real. And you're like, huh, I'm going to catch my parents any second, right? Like, you're like, okay, I'm going to see what one eye open. I'm going to be a little bit awake so I can hear what's going on. Like, I'm going to catch them. I remember waking up one year on Christmas morning and then seeing, sorry for the noise in the background. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that there was a note from Santa, and I go and I open this note and I say, okay, this is not my mom or my dad's handwriting, what the heck. And I'm thinking, okay, so Santa's real, right? Like, this is for sure. Like, this is Santa's handwriting. And, you know, down the years, my mom told me, oh, you know, that was actually Bobby did us that favor. He wanted to really help us. He wanted, you know, you to have that memory. And it was, like, very bittersweet because I remember visiting Bobby in the hospital. And, you know, I remember him deteriorating. It was very sad, you know, like, having someone who cares so much to do those little things, right, for a kid. Like, that's so sweet. Mm-hmm. And just being a part of our family, in a sense. And I think that's funny, right? Like, in the sense of, yeah, my Santa Claus letters were from Bobby. And, yeah, so what? He would dress up. And so who cares? Like, you know, it is what it is. But, like, not everyone has that experience. And I think that, yeah, there's a lot of good moments. There's a lot of funny things. There's a lot of good. There's a lot of sadness. But I have a lot of memorable moments. I could go on forever.
Yeah, I think it's definitely very few people that can say that their Santa Claus was a drag queen. That's honestly, that's a story in itself. And I think like what you mentioned, you went through, you know, very few people get to see and be a part of like such a significant change in people's lives. Mm-hmm. So from a young age, not only were you, you know, part of like their transformations, but you also saw, I guess, like a, you know, a sad part of it. And you know how you mentioned a lot of people contracted AIDS and everything. So yeah, you were exposed to a lot of changes. Like I think your life was just, you were constantly changing and you were just always exposed to change. Yes. Did it never get a bit overwhelming?
Yeah, I mean, how do you care, you know, you grow to care for people, and when you see them deteriorate in hospital, it's so sad to see that, and to see that, you know, the community is so broken, to see, you know, just like, you know, everyone grieving and mourning, you know, it's still a person, it's a soul. Like, I didn't see them as anything different. And imagine being so young. Like, I think it's hard for any young child to understand what that is. But I think that it was interesting in a sense, because it was like, Mom, like, how do you get that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, how do you tell your kid that, you know? How does that conversation come to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I'll tell you later, or like, don't worry about that. He just has that. Like, you know, I didn't understand it fully. It's easier, not that it's easy. Nothing like that is easy to talk about. But I think it's easy to say, you know, if you have a sickness, you got it just because you got it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you either it was in your genes, it got activated, it runs in your family history. It's a lot easier to understand that. But when you're a younger kid and you're like, what's going on? But why does something so bad happen to someone so good?
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard. I think that took a toll. And it's like, that wasn't the only person. I remember a few other people passing away of AIDS as well. Now, you know, and going back into 10 years, I remember, you know, that was very early on. I think in my early 20s, one of our very, very close family friends contracted AIDS. But AIDS, you know, the research, the medicine, everything had grown so much that, you know, he was able to live with AIDS and live a functioning life. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh my God, thank God. Thank God. And it was like, no, not a lot of people get that experience of, wow, this is what it used to really do to you. Or like when you got this diagnosis, this is what the whole community would be scared of. Like everyone's like, okay, this is what we're going to do for so-and-so. We're going to be there. We're going to help. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And now it's like, oh, okay. You know, research and science and everything has done so well that it's like, no, don't worry. You're going to be able to live with this. Your perspective shifts within the community too. Like, mm-hmm. Not everyone is filled with the fear. Or like, okay, we immediately have to start fundraising because we don't know how long this person has. So it's crazy. It's crazy to think that, like, even in that sense, I take a step back and I'm like, wow, I've seen even the transformation when it comes to medicine and how mm-hmm. it affects the community. So it's been quite the journey and quite the memories.
Yeah, no, and I think it was also very taboo back then. I still think it is a little bit, but I think especially back then, you know, it's something that was just particularly associated with the LGBTQA community, and now I think that's changing a lot thanks to research and medicine and everything. Mm-hmm. But it definitely must have been a challenge. But on a brighter note, what was one of the funniest moments you've had with a drag queen?
Funniest moments I've had with a drag queen. funny moments. Let's see. Okay, so I always remember this. I was never gonna forget this. So one of the nights, my dad's making these playlists, right? Like manually making CDs, guys. Like Sharpie and like your stack of CDs that you have to burn. And everyone's like kind of like in line. I'm here with my list of state capitals, okay? Little Natalie is learning her state capitals while my dad is working, making playlists. And I remember one of the drag queens, while she was waiting, she was like, oh, what are you studying? And I was like, oh, I'm learning my capitals. You know, it's really hard. It's a lot of memorizing. And I suck at it. And he was like, you know, okay, well, let me help you. I got to wait anyways. And I will never forget when this drag queen goes into complete song. And I learned my capitals through song. and I remember that his male name was Frank. And he had a different, like, performance name. Forget what it was. But his male name was Frank, so he started singing like, the capital of Kentucky is Frankfurt, and he would like snap, and I would never forget Frankfurt, and remember me, I'm Frank, and I was just like, wow, that's a lot of character, like, I'm not gonna forget that, and I remember saying, I will never forget this day, and I have still never forgotten this day, and so you can ask me any capital. Like, try to remember them. And I'd be like, okay, I just know Florida's, right? But besides that, I only know Kentucky, Frankfurt. That's it. Period. I can't remember anything else. Like, that is engraved in my mind forever.
What else is there? Like, tell us a bit about the pink robe story.
Oh, my God. So, I think that, like, when you watch the news and stuff, and you see like behind the scenes of different like celebrities, they always have like a robe is just associated with being glamorous and then going backstage while they're getting ready for, and like for drag shows, they're wearing robes, and I remember just wanting a pink robe. So it was like my birthday. I must have been like, I don't know, maybe around this age. I think I might be like 11 or 12, something like that. I'm like a little bit like preteen. And I'm like, I want a pink robe, okay? Because I'm a diva. Like, I want it glamorous. And so for my birthday, one of my really close friends, he comes over and he's like, I got you something you're going to love. And I was like, what is it? And I will never forget opening up this Macy's bag. I was like, ooh, Macy's, right? Like, I'm so spoiled. I open up this Macy's bag and I see this beautiful Barbie pink robe. And it's, like, my perfect size. I didn't know that they made robe for children's. Like, I thought I had to get, like, an adult robe and you were going to have to cut it and, like, all this stuff. But it was, like, it felt like it was tailored to me. It was this cute little mini pink robe, and it was plush. It was so soft. And I remember just getting it. I had it for so many years. I cried when I, like, it was, like, okay, this thing does not live. It's not going to survive another wash. Like, you have to get rid of it. I was, like, oh, my God. That is my Barbie pink robe, and it means so much to me. And it's just like every time I put it on, I always thought of the person. I always felt so glamorous, and I don't know. It's funny to think that it's those little things that you get that it's like the gift that keeps on giving. Like, yeah, I feel like a badass when I wear this. The gift of confidence is kind of like what I got when I got the pink robe. So every time I walk into Macy's, if I happen to see a pink robe, I just go back to that moment. And I think, you know, how can I not smile? It's such a beautiful memory.
Natalie, we're unfortunately getting to an end. I could actually sit here and listen to all your stories, but what was one of the best things about growing up with drag queens, and one of the worst, if there even is a worst?
I don't really think there's a worst. I think that if anything, I was like, okay, I have to make sure I do things right, because like when social media happened, it was like, if so-and-so found out that I didn't use their tip, they're gonna be upset, right? Like, fashion police. So it was like, okay, I have a little bit of pressure for that. But it was fun, right? Like, it was a cute type of pressure. So yeah, there was definitely nothing that was like the worst. And I think the best thing was, like, once I started going to Halloween parties, I was like, hey, do you have a Halloween costume I could borrow? And then, like, you know, if you had a party Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then it was like, okay, I'll lend you mine, and you lend me yours, and then we find another person, we lend it again, and then, like, we share Halloween costumes. It was just really cute. But that was literally one of my favorite things. I was like, yeah, I get I think that goes back into the whole, like, big sister thing, like, sharing clothes and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, honestly, it just sounds amazing. Like, it's honestly a story I've never heard before. I never imagined I would even hear a story like this. And it's a sense of community as well that I, you know, and also when you mentioned that you grew up with drag queens, I didn't imagine it was for, like, such a long span of time. It's honestly just, it's amazing. An amazing life that, looking at you or You know, it's the first impression. I would never imagine that you have so many stories to tell. And so, Natalie, what is one of the biggest life lessons you've learned from a drag queen that you'll take to your grave?
I think it's definitely fake it till you make it. So I think that for performance in general, you can take this with, you know, you're going to start a job, you have to do a presentation, or you are scared of public speaking or anything like that. You know, I think that, you know, even look at Beyonce, she has like this other, you know, Sasha Fierce from when she's going to get on stage that she transforms into. That it's like, okay, I'm not Beyonce, I'm Sasha Fierce, I'm going to go on stage and I'm going to give it my best. I think I learned that early on from drag queens. It was like, you're going to fake it until you make it. And when you get on stage, it doesn't matter what happened. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's going on in your life. It doesn't matter what you've been through. You're going to give the best show that you can give. And I think that that's a great lesson. I think for anyone listening, like, think about that. Like, next time you have a meeting, you have a presentation, you have an interview, you know, fake it till you make it. Think about that. Like, what is it going to take for me to put my best performance, my best self out here and really reach my potential? And I think that you wouldn't imagine thinking that that would be the lesson, but that was definitely the biggest thing I got from them.
Yeah, I think confidence is key, right? And just to, you know, making it in life. And I think that's great advice. I wouldn't necessarily, like you said, that's not the first thing I would think you would say, but I think it definitely makes sense. Yeah, that's honestly, Natalie, this has been great. And I hope everyone listening enjoyed as well. I'm sure you did, because these stories are just priceless. So yeah, thank you so much, Natalie, for joining us for this episode. And I really hope to have you here for another episode sometime soon. And yeah, thank you. And thank you everyone for listening to Gigi Talks. And stay tuned for our coming episodes. And if you haven't already, make sure to follow us on Instagram at GigiMagazine01, where we'll be posting weekly updates on our magazine as well as our podcast and some beautiful photos of some killer queens. So yeah, until next time. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.